Okay, so now in this continuation of this, how do you say, presentation, you know, of this Panchan Vinyaya, you're on fire, or is there a pot there on the spot? Really good day. Doubt. It is acceptable that the Vedas speak. Oh no, we already did this. Surely. Okay. So we concluded the Vastu Traya of the Vedas is the one explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this understanding is gained when one follows the advice of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and studies Vedas without interpretations. So this then gives a doubt. How can we know that the Vastutraya explained by Sriman Mahaprabhu is the ultimate Vastutraya of the Vedas? Right? Because there may be different forms of this. Objection. The words of the Vedas can be interpreted in many ways. And according to one's interpretation, one will get different meanings from the Vedic texts. Reply to the objections. The words of the Vedas can be interpreted in two ways, direct or mukya riti, or indirect or gona riti. If one interprets Vedas, one comes to incorrect conclusions. And if one takes direct meaning, one comes to the Vaishnava understanding of Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. Quote, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments that mukya riti, the direct meaning, is Abhida Vritti, or the meaning that one can understand immediately from the statements of dictionaries, whereas Gona Vritti, the indirect meaning, is the meaning that one imagines without consulting the dictionary. So that's from Adi Lila 7.1.10. Another example, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, quote, the Brahma Sutra compiled by Srila Vyasa is as radiant as the sun. One who tries to interpret it, its meaning simply covers that sunshine with a cloud. That's Madhya Lila 6.132, 138. Nir Naya, conclusion. It is therefore understood that if one properly interprets Vedas, according to the direct meaning, one will come to understand that every branch of Vedic literature culminates in Vaishnava conclusion. Also, the Vedic means you have your direct, your indirect, and your hidden. So every verse has its direct meaning. So that should always be used, right? Based on that, then you can refer to indirect and hidden meaning. But one should not neglect the direct meaning and go to indirect. That should be avoided. Otherwise, then one ends up with the wrong conclusions. Further definition of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So, we have Vishaya. Sambandha specifically refers to the relationship between the living entity, the world, and the Supreme Lord. Knowledge of any of these topics is called Sambandha Gyan. Doubt. In the Vedas, not only relationship between chit or spiritual nature, achit or material nature, and Ishwara, God, is described. So here he's saying that what is being described here, Sambandha means chit, achit, and Ishwara. Right? Chit meaning, you know, spiritual, achit meaning material, and Ishwara meaning the Supreme Lord. So the jivas, the material energy, and the Supreme Lord. So he's doubting that other relationships are also described in the Veda. Objection. For example, in the Jyotish Shastra, we find a description of a relationship between the man and Navagrahas, or nine planets controlling his karma. In other words, it's not just a relationship between the Jiva and God, but here's Jiva and the nine planets, the nine Navagrahas. Reply to objections. If one looks at the intermediate relationship without taking it to the ultimate ones, then one may come to the conclusion that the Vedas speak of many relationships. Nevertheless, if one extracts the essence of the Vedas, it is done in the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra, then one will see that ultimately Vedas speak about Sambandha in terms of Chit, Achit, and Ishwara. Right? That's standard. That's the Upanishadic viewpoint. Chit, Achit, Ishwara. Then the process that you will use because of this understanding and the goal that one can attain by following that process. Does that make sense? So the Upanishads will always end up with, you know, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, with Sambandha being as three. Right? You know, so that's the form of means. In the Dasamul, then we have means three aspects about Godhead, but you can count that as one. You have three aspects of a living entity, that is also can be counted as one. Then you have their relationship, right? So you can take those seven aspects of Sambandha and bring them into three points, right? And of course, since it's Upanishad is explaining it, it's understood that it's coming from authority or from Shastra. So the Amnaya is inferred here. Right? Does that make sense? So you still have all the different elements, but it's just being brought into a concise form because some interpretations of the Upanishads may not be able to fully appreciate all the different aspects of the jiva or of the Supreme Lord. Right? Like Karma Mimamsa says, taking the living entity is always going to be in the material world. So the liberated position, the natural liberated position, isn't something that they'll consider. But that the soul is eternal, you know, that they will consider. Right? And then God is basically kind of left out. They take karma as the supreme. So they don't see that karma is being sanctioned by Paramatma. Right? So that's the point, is they're not taking it far enough. They're only seeing the externals. Therefore, they say there's many relationships. But actually, if you go through the process, you'll see there's only Krishna. Nevertheless, if one extracts the essence of the Vedas, as done in the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra, then one will see that ultimately Vedas speak about Sambandha in terms of Chit, Achit, and Ishwara. In the Brihad Parasara Horta Shastra, we find a verse that the Navagrahas are incarnations of the Paramatma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the ultimate sense, the relationship between a man and the nine planets refers to his relationship with the Supreme Ishwara, who through the medium of the nine planets rewards him. So the nine planets, they edit the life of the living entity. Right? He rewards the living entity according to the fruits of his karma. Okay? You ever done any serious editing of fruit? Right, you know, fruit editors. According to the fruits of his karma. So the ultimate meaning of the relationship is the one which leads to ultimate conclusions and goals, and as such should be accepted above terminal or intermediate conclusions and understandings. Terminal. Okay. Right. Does that make sense? So in other words, means you see that it's between you and something of this world that you can observe, but actually, so you think it's something different, but actually the potency of that is coming from Krishna. Like all the nine planets, they have their deity. Their potency is coming from that planet. Means the sun planet gets its potency from Lord Ramachandra. It's a manifestation of him. The moon from Krishna. Right? Mars from Nrsingadev. Right? Does that make sense? So like this, then all the days, all the planets, they all have a potency that's coming from Krishna. So then one still understands it's still coming there, because that's the ultimate. That's what the Upanishads are giving us. For example, the Upanishadic Vakya, or great saying that Aham Brahmasmi, I am not this body, I am spirit soul, is instructing us in terms of chit category, describing the characteristics of the soul. The knowledge that the material universe is composed of 24 elements refers to acid category. Achid category. Achid. Okay. Achid? Where is chid? Do you have something to do with this or something? Oh, you run the go down. That's why you have all the 24 elements. It's chid category. Anyone who wants any combination of the 24 elements, you got to see chids here. So it is a chid category. So this is not achid or acid, it's a chid, right? Okay, the 24 elements refer to achid category, and knowledge describing the supreme creator, maintainer and destroyer of all that exists, both chid and material, achid, okay, is the knowledge of Ishwara category. These constitute Sambandha Gyan. Here are some verses that are examples of sambandha jnana. Dehi no smin yata dehe kaumaram yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir dhirastatra namuhyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Apareyam itas tvanyam prakritim vidhime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam dhariyate jagat. Besides these, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mind which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. Bhumir apo nalo vayu kam mano buddhire vacha ahankara iti yam me bhina prakritir astada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, and intelligence, and false ego, altogether these eight constitute my separated material energies, achid. So we're supposed to give an example of an Ishwara verse, which doesn't seem to have been put in. Okay, conclusion. By understanding the ultimate conclusions of the Vedas in regard to the understanding of sambandha jnana, one will understand who they are, what is their relationship with the world, as well as their relationship with the Supreme Lord. Okay. So then that clears that previous doubt. So now this then generates a new doubt. How can understanding of the relationship between chit, achit, and Ishwara benefit anyone? Objection. There are many learned scholars who are well versed in the knowledge of sambandha jnana and still suffer the miseries of repeated birth and death and appear to be covered by ignorance. Reply to the objection. While it is a good observation, it is not complete. In fact, there are many learned scholars who possess the knowledge of chit, achit, and Ishwara and are not liberated. This is not due to the imperfection on the part of the sambandha jnana, but due to not applying that knowledge to one's practical life. For example, one may have perfect knowledge in the culinary field, but unless one applies that knowledge in cooking, one still suffers from hunger and does not realize the taste of good food preparations. Thus, one has to engage in the activities which implement one's knowledge of chit, achit, and ishwara. These activities are known as abhideya tattva, and refer to the process of devotional service, which means activities like hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna's glories. The 64 items of devotional service are all abhideya tattva, as explained by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Quote, after sambandha comes abhideya, and abhideyas are a good deal in number. They are classified by some authorities as 64, some as 9, and some others as 5. Though there are multifarious courses to adopt, by means of which we can love the all love, the absolute, these methods are classified into 64 or 9 or 5 divisions. Of the 64 divisions, 5 are the principal ones. With these 5 divisions, we are to deal. These are 1, Bhagavat Shravana, Bhagavat Kirtana, and Bhagavat Smarana. 2, Sri Hari's Angri Seva. 3, Mathura Vasa. 4, Satsang, Company of Sadhus. And 5, Sri Harinam Sankirtan. So that's from Saraswati, 1999, Sri Chaitanya's Teachings, page 73. Right, so you have the 64 items, and then they have their 5, of the 64, 5 are primary. And the 64 also describes in it that one should perform the 9 angas of bhakti. But all we see here is how the 5 are put together, that they also include these 5 angas. I mean, these 9 angas. The 5 most important items of bhakti are found in CC. Sadhu Sangha, Nama Kirtan, Bhagavat Shravana, Mathura Vasa, Sri Murtira, Shradhaya, Seva. One should associate with devotees, chant the holy name of the Lord, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, reside at Mathura, and worship the deity with faith and veneration. In fact, all 64 items of bhakti are present in the 5 primary items. Within one, Bhagavat Shravana are Shravan, Kirtan, and Vishnu Smaranam. Within Murti Sevan are included Archanam. Many of the 44 items related to deity worship from the 64. Basically, when you get into, means there's 10 items that one should do 10 items one should avoid, then the remaining 44 basically are all deity worship, right? And then from that, we see prominent, then these five are there. So they most all come into there anyway. Within Mathura Vas and Vaishnav Seva are included Padasevanam. And Namakintan also included Dasim Sakim Atmi Nivedanam, which are the moods in which one engages in the preaching mission. Yeah, so we see the nine, the five expands into the nine, and the five also expands into the 64. So then it can be described in any of these ways. Right. Here are some quotes from Shastra that are examples of Abhideya Tattvics. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantas cha diridabrata namashyantas cha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evaishasi satyam te pratijane priyosi me. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Conclusion. Knowledge of Sambandha is complete and beneficial only when one engages in the activities of Abhideya Tattva. In other words, you have the knowledge, but it's only going to be useful to you if you apply it. So applied, then that becomes Abhideya. Okay? Because otherwise, before the doubt was, you have this knowledge, but still people are suffering. So it depends on how you apply it, right? You have this knowledge, you apply it properly through devotional service, then things start to work very nicely. Otherwise, then it can still be a problem. Okay. Doubt. How is it complete if it is only a part of Vastutraya? Well, it means how does Sambandha complete? Objection. Part of something is incomplete. And besides that, we see from the example of Bharat Maharaj that although he had a knowledge of Sambandha Gyan and was engaged in the devotional service according to the principle of Abhideya Tattva, still in his next life he had to be born as a deer. Reply to the objection. If a part of something is complete in itself, it is still considered complete. So the constituents of Vastutraya are complete in themselves since they constitute all the elements in their sphere. Nonetheless, if they are taken separately without their implications with other elements of Vastutraya, they do not bestow complete benefit. As in the example of Bharat Maharaj, he had knowledge of Sambandha Gyan, and him showing compassion towards the young deer was in accordance with the principles of Abhideya Tattva. His only weakness was that in his desire to help the young deer, he did not keep in mind the principle of Prayojana Tattva, did not dedicate his acts for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So in one's attempt to gain complete knowledge and realize the fruit of it, one has to take all the three elements of Vastutraya, since they are inseparable. Prayojana is the stage of love of Godhead. At this stage, the devotee longs for nothing but Krishna and experiences various symptoms of ecstasy, as exhibited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Here are some examples of verses that are Prayojana Tattva. Prahlad Maharaj was always absorbed in thought of Krishna. Thus, being always embraced by the Lord, he did not know how his bodily necessities, such as sitting, walking, eating, lying down, drinking, and talking, were being automatically performed. And he was so absorbed that it was just happening automatically. They're just material necessities, so they were just going on, but he was not focusing on them. Right? You know, just like the child. The child doesn't actually know how he ended up being dressed and how he got, you know, was fed. You know, it just happens. You know, while he's trying to walk away, his mother's trying to dress him or feed him. So he is unaware of the actual how it works, because he has other absorption. So then, in the same way, the devotee is so absorbed in the Supreme Lord that he doesn't even really take note of how all the bodily necessities are being taken care of. They happen, but that's not of great interest. Because of advancement in Krishna consciousness, sometimes he cried, sometimes laughed, sometimes expressed jubilation, and sometimes sang loudly. Conclusion. Persons sincerely desiring perfection should take into consideration and keep in heart all three aspects of Vastutraya. By doing so, he will certainly attain perfection. This can be easily done by following in the footsteps of the Vaishnavas, as there are three categories of Vaishnava prayers that also relate to Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. These are in order of correspondence, Danya Bodhika, Samprarthanatmika, and Lalasamayi. Samprarthanatmika, or prayer with wholesome submission of mind, and everything to the Lord. An example of Samprarthanatmika is given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.153 as follows. O my Lord, as the minds of young boys and girls remain attached to one another, please let my mind be attached to you. Danya Bodhika, or making known one's insignificant and worthlessness, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.154, is cited as follows. O Purushottama, in this world there is no sinner or offender like me. Even though you are an ocean of causeless mercy, I am ashamed even to request you to forgive my offenses. What more can I say? Lalasamayi, or an intense yearning for the personal service of the Lord. This is furthest... what more can I say? Okay, that ends that. Lalasamayi, or an intense yearning for the personal service of the Lord. This is further stated as follows in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.156. O Pundarak... O Pundarikaksha, lotus-eyed Lord, when upon the bank of the Jamuna, with eyes brimming with tears of ecstasy, and voice choked up with divine spiritual emotion, will I chant your holy names and dance like a madman? Right? Doubt. What is perfection for one person may be imperfection for another. Objection. For the followers of Kandapurva Mimamsa, perfection is to elevate themselves to the heavenly planets in order to enjoy material happiness. Whereas for the followers of Shankaracharya's school of Uttara Mimamsa, is to give up all material enjoyments and liberate themselves from material sphere. Reply to the objection. Ultimately, one has to take into consideration that there are two paths for spiritual realization. They are known as ascending and descending processes. Thus, for those following the ascending path, their vastutraya may be different according to the individual relationship, realization, and its spiritual advancement. Thus, we see many schools of Vedic philosophy with different vastutraya. On the other hand, those following the descending path accept the vastutraya given by the Vedas themselves and follow it in order to obtain perfection. Conclusion. The duality of perfect and imperfect is a concept born out of mind, conditioned by material concepts, such as one's identification with birthplace, family traditions, culture, etc. If one takes up the ascending path, one will elevate oneself to the platform, which is above material conditioned mind, and free oneself from all apparent contradictions. Okay. That all these different schools come up, but that we see this is because they have different motives, and because of these different motives, then they'll interpret the Veda differently. So apparently, they're coming up with different concepts of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, but these are because of their indirect interpretation. By the direct, then one would come to the conclusion of how do you say it? Pure unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Does that make sense? But these different schools come up because of their material desires. So then they're imperfect in their, I say, interpretation. So the idea is that if you hear from authority coming down in parampara, one will not be have this problem of these mistakes. Therefore, we see is what comes down in the Vaishnava Sampradayas is perfect. But what comes down in these other lines, or what people create themselves, will always be short. It will always be perfect. I mean, imperfect, right? Does that make sense? Okay, the process for receiving pure Vastutraya. Okay, Vishaya. Knowledge of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana is received from the spiritual master. Doubt. It is a common practice in Vedic circles to receive diksha or initiation, but still they all have different vastutrayas. Objections. There are many gurus that initiate their disciples into various vastutrayas. So it appears that initiation itself is not the only condition for receiving ultimate vastutraya spoken about by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Reply to objection. As the Vedas are very vast, covering a wide range of topics, person following Vedic teachings may easily become confused about the Vedas' essential and ultimate teachings. Thus, some people think enjoyment is the prayojana, others think liberation is the prayojana, while others think the attainment of mystic powers, the siddhis, is the prayojana. The six systems of Vedic philosophy, as they are known today, are different misunderstandings of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Their original and pure form could be found in Srimad Bhagavatam. Right, so he's saying is that you receive this understanding of astutraya from the spiritual master. You know, so that's the proper way. But then the objection is brought up that there are so many spiritual masters and you're getting so many actual understandings of vastutraya, right? So now he's going to introduce that there are six systems of this, you know, the Vedic systems. And then from this you get so many derivatives. So it doesn't seem to be enough that the initiation process is there, right? One has to see what is behind it, what's the purpose of it, right? So this is, you know, it's a valid point, but it'll be shown that still it's coming from spiritual master. What is your definition of spiritual master like this? What is the proper understanding? Because we're not taking something that's improper to be there. One has to have this understanding. Like we see is that in it we have, even in our own, what the spiritual master is giving you, the Bhagavat aspect of initiation. You have the Pancharatrik, and then there's the Vedic. So then, what we call Diksha means the Bhagavat and the Pancharatra, right? The Vedic isn't actually important for us as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but that has been added by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur into everybody's, but it's actually a different process. Upanayana is a different process, right? It's the Vedic process. It means you're connected now, you can study the Shastras, but it is not technically when you're following the process of Bhagavata Pancharatrik, an entrance into that. That's why it's called Upanayanam, to bring near. It doesn't mean that you bring near, but it doesn't mean that you are properly connected. Does that make sense? Therefore, that's why the Pancharatrik system of initiation, the Bhagavat, where then one takes the spiritual initiation. In other words, Upanayanam is for the support of spiritual, but it itself is not specifically, by our definition, spiritual. Does that make sense? It's a different process. It's part of the process of learning, of study. That's why the students, they would get the Upanayana, right? Then from there, as they spiritually mature, then they would take Diksha from the spiritual master, right? So, but this only works when you're dealing with the Vedic lifestyle, because these mantras only work if one's following a sattvic lifestyle. If one doesn't have the qualities, they don't function like that. It's not like the holy name, despite your qualification or disqualification, it still works. Just if you're more qualified, it works better. If you're less qualified, it works less better. But the Vedic mantras, then you're qualified, it works. You're not qualified, it doesn't work. So, therefore, the mantra is such that if there's the qualities of the material qualities, like we were discussing in Mahabharata, you have those good qualities that Yudhishthira Maharaj is talking about, then that sets you up for using those qualities in devotional service. But the point is, a human being functions on good qualities. Right? So the Upanayana is for that purpose, developing those qualities for the one who shows the serious potential, because they have to be able to maintain them, right? Then it helps there. But engaging those qualities in devotional service, that's another question, right? Does that make sense? Because the piety is situated between devotion and sin. So it has the mentality of sin, but the activity or qualities of devotion. Does that make sense? That's why it's in its own category. So real piety is things that are done for Krishna, right? And real sin is what is not done for Krishna. Does that make sense? That's the real definition. But in analyzing it so we can understand, you know, between the material to the spiritual, then you have sinful, pious, devotional. So the pious situation is a very good situation because the pious elements are elements of devotional service, right? They're elements of the character and lifestyle of those who live in the spiritual world. But what really makes the residents of the spiritual world residents of the spiritual world is their mentality of devotion. But what makes the people of the material world residents of the material world are the sinful mentality. Right? Because someone who's pious, they still stay in the material world. They don't go back to Godhead. Because the quality is still, you know, not right. Does that make sense? So what you're trying to get is the proper culture and the proper mentality. Right? So that means the proper culture, performance of your duties with devotion. Right? That's the most powerful. That's the best situation. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it's always being described. Is how, it means how to deal with that, how to bring about so that proper cultivation develops these qualities. So that is its piety. So in other words, the pious person gets upanayana, right? Not the impious. Right? But it's the spiritual person who gets diksha. Does that make sense? They maybe use the same term, but we have to understand it's being applied in three different fields. Right? You know, it's just like you have someone who is a very excellent cook. And they can cook so many very nice preparations, you know, according to, you know, a very nice particular cuisine like that. And so that, you could call that is cooking, right? Then there's others who can put something together or you just do something simple, right? So it's well cooked, but, you know, it's not like a full manifestation, right? And then you go and you buy yourself some 2-minute Maggi noodles, you know, and then stick them in the microwave. Technically it's being cooked, but you don't call that cooking. Does that make sense? Therefore, the Bhagavat, that's initiation. The Pancharatra, because it's Ekanayana, it's for the deity, that's initiation. Upanayanam is not initiation. Right? Because what it does is it cultivates the good qualities that are useful to free yourself from material existence. But unless those same qualities are used in devotion to the Lord, they will not get you into the spiritual world. Therefore, they're not, by us, considered initiation. Does that make sense? We understand the difference. So now you know why you can't install deities and go up on the Pancharatrika altar. I mean, the temple altars and worship the deity. Yes? No? Okay. There's a distinction. So in other words, it's something useful for education, but it's not in our process of worshiping the deity. Right? It was by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established that for use by the adults, because technically an adult cannot get upanayana, because they're already past the time. Everything has a time, so they've missed the time. But through the process of chanting the holy name, they become purified, that they can take up the pancharatric process, right? And then therefore have the good qualities necessary, you know, for the Vedic. Does that make sense? So it's through chanting that one gets it. And the only reason he's throwing it in, because it's not actually so important, he's putting it in because then the common person who sees according to just social status and that will accept the Vaishnavas as Brahmins. Right? Because you don't want to deal with, even you're being really as mundane as you can get, you wouldn't want to identify a Vaishnav as anything less than a Brahmin. Right? Because a Brahmana means one who is searching after Brahman, who is situated in Brahman. Right? So for the more mundane, then Brahman may be just the Brahmajyoti. You know, but we understand Brahman meaning the Supreme Brahman or Krishna. So one who is situated in Krishna consciousness, that's a real Brahman. So minimum they're accepted in that way. Because otherwise before, as those who were in families that they went through the Upanayana process as their family tradition, they would get it and they would wear a thread. But those who didn't. It didn't matter. You know, it just you just didn't care. Does that make sense? So those who are like Srinivasacharya, you see him, he's wearing a thread. But Narottam Das Thakur is not. Because he didn't get Upanayana. Right? But they both have Pancharatra Diksha. You understand? So, because the thread goes with the Brahma Gayatri, it doesn't go with the Pancharatra. Because you don't need the thread to chant the Gayatri. The thread shows that this is somebody that has a particular qualification, particular minimum qualification. Does that make sense? Right? It's not a tool for chanting. No? Our tool is for chanting. He likes chanting. Does that make sense? Any questions on this? No? Time's up. What the time to be up?
The boys and the devotees that they take Upanayana, the devotees that they take Pancharatra initiation, they will look the same, right?
They will look the same.
But the mentality will be different.
Yes, because the Upanayana means he's coming close to getting spiritual, but it doesn't mean he's made it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Because we see many, they take up the process, and as long as they're in following the process here, then it works, and they have those qualities. But as soon as they leave this process and go elsewhere, within a few weeks, then they just become another face in the crowd. You know what I'm saying? You know, of course, out of ego, they'll keep the thread, this, that. But they don't practice, they don't do, and they can see easily that they don't have the qualification. That makes sense. So that's why, traditionally, it's something of the Vedic Gurukul environment. Right? And then, from that, then they go on to practice it. Those who practice it, then that they would be properly situated. Those that don't practice it, then that's considered fallen state. Right? So the idea is to get from that to initiation. Right? Not be, means that the Upanayana is not enough. Not in this age. People don't have the qualifications. They don't have the adhikar through that to perfect their life. Right? So it's through the Pancharatra, you know, that they do better. But the Pancharatra only works in this age because of the Bhagavad. So ultimately it's the Bhagavad. It's how well they chant and how much they're committed to chanting the holy name. That's what actually defines their advancement. Not how well they do puja or worship or do yajnas or this and that. That's all part of the Pancharatric element. But it's more that devotion and the chanting and the association with Vaishnavas that actually defines it. Someone who can associate well with devotees, they're more advanced. Someone who can't associate well with devotees, they're less advanced. Right? So someone who gets bigger and who feels they're more in charge and therefore feels they're more advanced but can't get along with others actually is not act very advanced. They're older, they're bigger. Yes, that's there. So there's some respect is due. But spiritual, that's another topic. They shouldn't mix the two topics. Yeah? Does that make sense? No? The six systems of Vedic philosophy, as they are known today, are different misunderstandings of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. The original and pure form can be found in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The only exception means of the six systems means you can classify it as all six are bogus, or you can classify it as one is proper, five are bogus. It just depends upon who you count as Uttaramimamsa, right? If you're counting Shankara, then six are bogus. And Vyasadeva, then as is in the proper situation. Right? So sometimes you hear about, you know, Vedanta is in the proper category and the other five are not. And sometimes you hear that all six are bogus. You understand? Because Shankara also uses Vyasa's school, the Vedanta, but he misinterprets it as impersonalism rather than as Vaishnavism. Does that make sense? Yeah? So just to be clear. The only exception is Srila Vyasadeva, who gives the pure understanding in his Vedanta Sutra. It is because he has received his knowledge from a bona fide spiritual master in a disciplic succession. Later on, even his words were misinterpreted by Shankaracharya as Mayavad, because Shankara didn't receive his knowledge from a spiritual master coming down from Srila Vyasadeva. It is therefore essential to receive knowledge of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana from a spiritual master in one of the four Vaishnava Sampradayas who actually knows the conclusions of Vedic teachings. Even so, even in different Vaishnava Sampradayas, there are different Prayojans or desired relationships with Krishna, and thus the sadhana in each Sampradaya varies. In the Sri Sampradaya, the Prayojana is Surupi Mukti, and so the sadhana is to serve Lord Narayana in awe and veneration. In the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya, the prayojana is to serve Bala Gopal in parental rasa. And so the sadhana is centered around the worship of Bala Gopal. In the Sampradaya of Srila Rupa Goswami, the foremost disciple of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the prayojana is pure unalloyed service to Krishna, and so the sadhana is to serve Sri Chaitanya by serving the Sankirtan mission and hearing and chanting the glories of Sri Sri Radha Krishna in Vrindavan as Lord Chaitanya did. The position of the spiritual master that he directs the disciple first in Sambandha Gyan, to remind him of his relationship with Krishna, then in Abhideya and Prayojana Tattvas to properly establish him in the process of devotional service and fix him on the goal of love of God. Right? So first is Sambandha Gyan. You have to know who Krishna is, who you are, and what this material world is. What's the relationship? Having understood that, then you can start with devotional service. You can take up the devotional service, understanding that the goal is to develop love for Godhead. Right, then it'll work. Because if you don't know who you are, then it doesn't work. So before that, you engage people in devotional service, but that's called the Jnata Sukriti. They're doing devotion, but they don't know what it is, because they don't know who God is, who they are, what's going on. But they're doing devotional activities. People come up, they pull the rope at Rath Yatra, they take prasad. So it's devotional activities, but because they don't know it's devotional activities, it's a Jnata Sukriti. Right? Does that make sense? That's why when you distribute prasad, if you distribute prasad that this is, you know, Hare Krishna prasad, you know, it's offered to God, then they know it's devotional service, so they get that benefit. If they just, it's just, you know, you're just distributing food to the poor and trying to help out, it is prasad, but the people taking it don't know it's prasad, don't know it's service, so all they get is a Jnata Sukriti. Right? Taking enough of that prasad is like Jnata Sukriti. One day they may come in contact, you know, nicely with the devotees, take up the devotional process. But in other words, the more it can be known, the better. Right? Does that make sense? So this distinction between a Jnata Sukriti, in other words, it's piety that is connected to Krishna, but it's unknown piety. Right? So all they know is a good activity, right? Yes.
If the entire Sankirtan body is going and they request please chant Hare Krishna and someone chants without knowing an explanation of what the chanting is.
That's a Jnata Sukriti. But the point is by that, when it increases enough, then it brings one to the platform of Shraddha. That's why one is always trying to benefit or generate this Jnata Sukriti for people, right? So when you go down the street and you're dhoti, then people will say, oh, Hare Krishna and this and that. We're feeling uncomfortable, this and that, but the people are getting a Jnata Sukriti. But otherwise what happens is, it doesn't. And so now when they see us walking down the street, they think we're Buddhists. So there's not even a Jnata Sukriti for that, right? And we will call this preaching. That's the best part, right? Just fitting in, not trying to disturb anybody like that. And so we're not disturbing anybody. They're all becoming Buddhists like that, because it would be a disturbance if we actually brought them in contact with Krishna, you know, ruin their material prospects. Well, you can be a Buddhist and still be a gross materialist. You know, just a nice gross materialist. Yes?
What is the service
of
consciousness?
If devotees are doing service but they're not conscious, no, it's still devotional service because they know it's devotional service, they're just not conscious of the time. So the benefit from it will be less, right? The more conscious you are, the more benefit is there. But they are sampradayic, they've connected themselves, Right? So therefore it's devotional service. Those who know it's devotional service, have it connect themselves, they're getting benefit, but they're still not sampradayic. They're still just general devotees. Like that. That's why children born in devotee family are still general devotees. When they take initiation, follow the process seriously, then they're sampradayic. Like that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise then, if people are born in devotee families, you know, pious families like that, be engaged in devotional service, but they may not be so strict, or they do the activities nicely, don't know the philosophy, or know the philosophy, don't do the activities, or know both, but you know, choose to do something else. But you know what I'm saying? So they're devotees, but it's beyond Agyata Sukriti. But the difficulty is because of the lack of focus or determination, they may not bring it to the sampradayic stage very quickly. So the sampradayic stage, that's where Krishna takes you seriously. You know? Because the point is one may say, oh, but they're devotees, this, that, why you make a distinction? The point is they were devotees in last life, they didn't make it, so they came back this life. So the point is it's dynamic when one is connected to the sampradaya. Right? If one's in association of those who are sampradayic, that's also very good. That's the process. But it's still when one makes that personal commitment that it becomes real. Right? Does that make sense? At the same time, is then we know that those persons are meant to become sampradayic devotees because they didn't perfect themselves in the last life as one. You understand? That's it. No, Vaishnava means one who accepts Vishnu. So therefore, they may be sampradayic or not. That's just one division so that you know who's more serious and who's not, so to distinguish here. So that you get distinguished between Agyata Sukrita Kriti, devotional service that's known but not so seriously or committed, and committed, which may be more conscious or less conscious. So you have all these different stages. Okay, so we'll continue with these aspects. Today is Monday, so tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.